KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of He Moves Like the Ocean, a performance on Monday, March 26th at 7:30 p.m. at Performance Works Northwest in Portland. In this performance, adults take on movements of a child. Three pairs of dancers and musicians will learn and score short clips of the child's movement and then improvise in his style. Again, that's He Moves Like the Ocean, a performance on Monday, March 26th at 7:30 p.m. at Performance Works Northwest, 4625 Southeast 67th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
It's 9 o'clock. You're listening to KBOO Portland, and here's what we have coming up for you this morning. First up, it's Political Perspectives. Investigative journalist Andy Worthington discusses perpetual detention at Guantanamo, plus the Supreme Court's recent ruling that allows immigrants facing deportation to be held indefinitely. Linda Olson Osterlund is waiting in the wings to bring you Andy Worthington. And then at 10 o'clock, it's Air Cascadia headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, Recovery Zone talks to Leslie Gregory from the nonprofit group Right to Health about racism as a public health issue. Thank you, KBOO members, for your support. If you'd like to join us, become a member, you can get involved here by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate to become a member. We're going to go to a little bit of music while we attempt to get Andy on the phone. And Andy Worthington will be with us momentarily. Thanks for tuning into KBOO this morning. Thank you. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9:09, and we're still trying to get a hold of Andy Worthington so that Linda Olsen Osterlund can interview him. They're going to discuss perpetual detention at Guantanamo and also the Supreme Court's recent ruling that allows immigrants facing deportation to be held indefinitely. All that is coming up on KBOO this morning, hopefully during this hour, and we're going to listen to a little more Bill Frisell until we get Andy on the phone. Thanks for bearing with us.
Thank you. Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to KBOO and Political Perspectives this morning. I'm your host, Linda Olson-Osterlund. If you've been listening the last few minutes, you know we're having some technical difficulties reaching Andy Worthington. We do have a new phone system here, and we are calling the right number, and we're in email connection with Andy, but it's going to take us a few more minutes. So I thought I would go ahead and tell you a little bit about Andy Worthington and why we're having him on. He's a recognized authority on Guantanamo. He is the author of the book, The Guantanamo Files, The History of the 774 illegal men held illegally in America's prisons. He is the co-founder of Close Guantanamo. He's also the co-director of the film Outside the Law, Stories from Guantanamo. In the last few years, he's become a singer-songwriter also. He is the lead singer of the London band The Four Fathers. I don't need to tell you that it has a political bent to a lot of the music. He's also been photographing London and has a photo project, as well as most recently he's been working on the housing crisis in London that was brought to bear because of that horrible fire that we so all heard about, an apartment fire. So he is a well-rounded man and a great authority on Guantanamo, probably the most authoritative author about it. And so we'll be really happy to have him on when he comes on. There have been new developments at Guantanamo, obviously, under Trump. And we will want to talk about those. About halfway through the show, really now, it's about another 10 to 15 minutes, we will open the phone lines, and I'll give you that number in a little bit. Some of you already know it. There are many developments, actually, since President Trump announced that he was not going to close Guantanamo. There are lawsuits going on about the prisoners who are still held there. There was in January, carrying through into January, an art exhibit of art that came out of the prisoners in Guantanamo. And there is a construction boom. There's a destruction boom and a construction boom going on the island of Guantanamo. On Guantanamo Bay Camp. So we will want to talk about all of those things with Andy Worthington. I'm going to check with my engineer and see if we're close to having him. He's with us. Let's welcome Andy Worthington. Good morning, Andy. So sorry about the delay.
That's all right. Hello, Linda. I hear it's been a problem getting a transatlantic connection.
Yes, that was apparently the issue. We have a new phone system that we are not having work properly for us. The old one was really, really fell apart quickly, and so this new one has been taking a little while for us to learn. And maybe, who knows, there might be some right-wing gremlins in there trying to make it worse. We never know those things. I find some of my favorite websites are hard to bring in nowadays.
That's terrible.
Yeah, really. Like Democracy Now, I always get buffering on it. I don't get buffering on Netflix or Hulu, when I'm going for profit-making. So I'm really glad to have you. I wanted to talk with you about Donald Trump's decision to keep Guantanamo open and what it means, and basically the whole issue of perpetual detention.
Sure.
So bring us up to date.
Well, yes, exactly. Donald Trump has now sadly been the president of the United States for, what are we on now, 14 months? And in that period of time, no one has left Guantanamo. And that's not because there aren't people there who are eligible for release. There are actually five men who had their release approved by high-level government review processes that were established under President Obama. And there's a sixth man there who is supposed to be going back to Saudi Arabia to serve a continued prison sentence. He agreed to a plea deal in his military commission trial, which was 4 years ago. And under the terms of that agreement, he was supposed to have been repatriated in February, where he's going to carry on serving a prison sentence for many years. That also hasn't happened. And then for the rest of the men who are held, just nine of them are involved in various ongoing trial processes in the military commission system, which is a kind of horrendously broken system that is seems almost unable to deliver justice. But at least they're in some nominal process, whereas the rest of the prisoners, and that I think is 26 men, are in this pretty much endless limbo where no one has any intention of releasing them, and yet, you know, they're not going to be charged with anything. They are really still America's forever prisoners. And, you know, and we're faced with this whole problem that Donald Trump seems to be happy to shut the door on Guantanamo to make sure that no one leaves. Now, you know, we're all, I think, fortunate that he hasn't managed to send anyone new there.
Yes, that would be one concern. Now, we should remind people that under Obama, 200 people, about 200 people were transferred out of Guantanamo, and something like 234 or so before Obama. So the skid to nothing, to no one, is significant.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was actually over 500 people who were released by George W. Bush, and nearly 200 under Obama. So yeah, the absolute refusal to release anyone is is something of a terrible novelty.
Now, we know that there is a lawsuit on behalf of 11 of the men. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. I mean, this is where the Center for Constitutional Rights in New York and Reprieve, which works in the UK and the US, and a number of other law firms and lawyers have got together on behalf of their clients, which is 11 of the 41 men still held, to seek intervention from a judge on the basis that, as they say, given Donald Trump's public proclamations of refusing to consider releasing anyone from Guantanamo, their imprisonment is now, you know, can be judged legally to be arbitrary and, you know, never-ending, essentially, and that's not an acceptable position for any civilized country to be in when it comes to depriving people of their liberty. I think the lawyers are right. Unfortunately, you know, we've seen responses so far from the Justice Department. Now, we don't know how the judge is going to ultimately rule on this one, but the Justice Department lawyers are, furiously claiming that it's not arbitrary and that there are review processes. Now,
the review processes are very interesting. I was reading in some of them where, you know, they're basically set up to require that the detainee or the prisoner, show remorse or guilt. Now, these could be a person who had nothing to do with any war undertaking, who was just picked up because he was in a kind of, a guest house, a place where people stay when they're traveling, and was picked up and put in detention and eventually Guantanamo, probably tortured to some degree along the way. And so we know that there are people there who are not dangerous, who just got picked up, and yet they're still held there. They're still going to be held there.
Well, that's absolutely true, Linda. And, you know, this is the second review process that Obama established. So he set up one when he first came into office. And that was a review board that basically said two-thirds of the men he was holding ought to be freed, and nearly all of them were under his presidency. The second review process was much more like a parole-type process, so it required the prisoners to be contrite and to demonstrate to a panel of people from the military and the intelligence services that they would, lead constructive lives after their release. You know, so in other words, to put business plans together and to get testimonials from their family and all kinds of people.
Put business plans together when you haven't seen your family in so many years. Maybe you're only able to write them. And physical health is not always good of the detainees either.
Certainly requires very helpful and cooperative attorneys, which fortunately a lot of the men have. But, you know, this did lead under Obama to 36 men being released. And what we've now hit with Trump is that obviously, you know, those people who were released included much clearer examples of, for example, there were a number of those men who the U.S. finally conceded after many, many, many years were actually cases of mistaken identity. But we are still in that problem where some people have the wrong attitude, and that's why they're still being held. So they refuse to either, as you mentioned, concede guilt for something that they didn't do, or the other thing that is still happening with the way the military views these men is that if they've, you know, been resistant to the terms of their imprisonment for all these years, in other words, that they've, you know, been
hunger open, strikes or those kinds of activities.
People who've embarked on hunger strikes and that kind of thing. So, you know, we're in this terrible position. And I think what's also interesting for your listeners, and I think that it would be fair to say that most people don't actually appreciate this, is that many of the lawyers in the Justice Department Civil Division, which is the part of the Justice Department that deals with Guantanamo, are the very same people who were involved when President Bush set up Guantanamo in the first place. In other words, these career lawyers in the Justice Department have been defending the existence of Guantanamo for 16 years. They're some of the same people. They worked under Bush, they worked under Obama, and now they're there under Trump. And they're still, as they were then, doing everything that they can to defend the right of the President of the United States to keep whoever he wants in Guantanamo for however long he wants to keep them there. And I think that's pretty disgusting and pretty disgraceful.
It's very scary, too.
And I wish more people knew about it.
Yes. Well, you know, one of the things that has occurred to me, one thing I wanted to say right here is that just keeping our attention on Guantanamo can be hard with so many other very serious changes taking place in the political and social fabric of the United States and actually the world. And so absolutely, I feel like Guantanamo gets lost in the background and begins to feel hopeless. And we should say it certainly isn't hopeless if we've gotten out almost 700 people over the last few years. So we shouldn't see it as hopeless, but is it in a worse position with Trump? I think absolutely. And I wanted to bring up another Supreme Court ruling, which I don't fully understand. I'm not an attorney, but I have read about, and it was about the right of people detained in immigration detention centers to have a hearing every 6 months so that they can, it's basically a habeas corpus hearing, so that they can be determined why they need to stay in detention while their case is going forward or at all. And the Supreme Court ruled, one, they send it back to a lower court to make a ruling on whether it's constitutional to have indefinite detention, but they basically stated that it was in their seeing, there was no guarantee at all in the Constitution of immigrants being given any hearing. And
right,
I think one of the questioners says, does that mean they could be held 5 years? And they said, well, theoretically, yes. We're telling you there's no right to a hearing. Well, it seems that the right of habeas corpus was really in the Constitution guaranteed to all persons. Our Constitution does not give rights here only to citizens. It gives them to any person in the United States, and certainly immigrants are people. So this ruling from the Supreme Court seems very ominous to me.
Yeah.
And
well, I think unfortunately we're in a slightly gray area there, Linda. I mean, one of the things that, you know, to be honest, I'm so busy with various injustices that are going on that I haven't had time to focus on one here in the UK that I think is particularly abominable, and that is that people held in basically in immigration detention here, so people who have applied to, you know, be allowed to stay in the UK but have failed, and then the UK has problems sending them back. Isn't it funny that so often because they're from places where their lives are
in
danger?
Yeah, exactly why they argue for asylum. Yes, yeah.
But we have people, we can keep people indefinitely in these prisons, you know, that are basically border prisons. They're not necessarily geographically located on the border of the UK. But these are people who have been told that they cannot stay in the UK, but the UK can't get rid of them. And they are imprisoned for years and years and years and years. And there's no end limit on that detention.
Are your prisons still government-owned, or are they privately owned or privately run?
We have some private ones as well. But, you know, but I mentioned that because I think it's the same issues that are involved
yes.
in the U.S., that people who are, it has been said, you know, these are not people who are ever citizens, but neither are they given the rights of residents, then these are the people who are being judged as nobodies, who, you know, who are, it's the same thing is happening, that the,
yes.
the struggle is to give rights to these people when the system is saying they have no rights, and therefore we can imprison them for as long as we wish. And that clearly is not acceptable on any level, Linda, but it's...
It hasn't been acceptable in democratic countries for over 1,000 years, I believe, from the early democracies. But, you know, it's becoming, I don't think it's constitutional. I don't think there's any question it's constitutional. But in our system, the Supreme Court gets to determine what's constitutional
sure.
or not, not us out here.
And one of the problems that we've had, Linda, since last January is that we have a president in who thought that it was perfectly acceptable to ban the entrance to the United States of anybody from a number of countries that he designated as some kind of spurious risk based on completely racist assumptions, when there's no grounds for doing that, you know. And I was still in the States. I was in the States for Trump's inauguration, and in those first few weeks of his presidency, it was appalling the things that he was coming up with. And I think the, you know, what was called the Muslim ban was so central to the things that were wrong, that here he was trying to ban people from an entire country, and he couldn't even come up with a good justification for why that was. It was flat out racism and
other political reasons as well. And the thing, though, that is interesting is that Muslim ban, had some good court hearings that, you know, sounded like it wasn't going to go through, and it's still in the midst of one of those. But at this point, it's allowed to go forward with its processing. So we are certain that there are, of course, people not getting to this country who were in midstream in getting here in terms of the immigration process and are now stopped outside of the country, not able to join their families or come
Absolutely.
Here for other reasons.
I think I've heard this in the case of, juveniles as well,
yes.
stranded in various countries, unable to rejoin their families.
And there was at least one immigrant youth in a county prison here in Oregon. It's called NorCor. I do want to say the thing I asked you about private prisons. NorCor is a county prison, but we have private-run facilities here in the United States. The detention center in Tacoma, which is where the deportations are made for anyone from our region, is run by I believe Geo company, and there's another one running them here. And the problem with the additional problem of having a private corporation run your prisons is that they have a monetary interest in maintaining their beds full. And so
totally. And so
when we say they can hold people forever, we're just giving them an endless dollar stream going to them. And so I think that adds
Yeah, that is very significant, Linda. Absolutely.
Yeah, and they do, and they literally do. You know, they want to keep all their beds full every night.
Yeah.
Please
don't mention this to Donald Trump, because he may get ideas that privatizing Guantanamo is a way to keep the men there forever and make good money.
Wouldn't that be interesting? Well, you know, we're going to open the phones in a few minutes, but I did want to briefly talk about one other aspect of what's happening in Guantanamo, and that is the construction boom or the destruction boom. So there's two aspects of it. One, they're destroying places like, I believe it's Camp X-Ray, that have
yeah.
historic importance for the fact that they were the first facility there and torture did take place there. We maintain Auschwitz. But apparently our government is going full force ahead around the world trying to destroy former black sites. And I see this as a way of destroying the evidence. So they're both at the one time trying to destroy some of the worst of the camps in Guantanamo. They're also building a whole bunch of buildings. It's a big long list, and one of them is a 13,000 tent refuge, a tent facility for 13,000 refugees. Now, that makes me scared as well, because in the past, held at Guantanamo, Haitian refugees suffered extremely bad circumstances, and it had to take a lawsuit to have that even released and them to be moved off there. So have you been giving any thought to this destruction and construction boom going on in Guantanamo?
Well, I have, absolutely. I mean, I just, you know, recently on my website wrote about the destruction of Camp X-Ray, because it struck me as so very clearly a move that was designed to remove the evidence. And I thought it was, frankly ridiculous that the argument that was made by the Justice Department and those lawyers I was mentioning before, mm-hmm. well, these familiar names turned up again, but arguing that because the FBI created a 3D simulation of Camp X-Ray, there was no need to keep the real thing. They actually use that as an argument.
Yeah, like, so no forensic evidence of any sort, actually, in terms of, you know, what is there.
No, and I think what's more important is that these are memorials to something that took place that is extremely contentious. This is...
And still going on. This is an Auschwitz after the war. This is still going on.
Yeah. And if we look around the world at sites where, you know, Robben Island, where Nelson Mandela was held, that wasn't destroyed. If we look around at, quite often what happens is that the victors in terrible circumstances destroy the evidence of what they got up to. And when it comes to the war on terror, Guantanamo is the only place really that they managed to maintain this notion that there is some spurious legality to it. You know, this is a prison that is justified by the authorization for use of military force that was passed by Congress just after 9/11, and the Supreme Court said a couple of years later that they were allowed to hold prisoners there until the end of hostilities. When we look at the black sites, clearly there was never any official justification for those to exist. They were illegal. They were set up covertly. They are no less illegal and haven't been at any point. And for those to have been destroyed, and we heard in January in the military commissions that one of them...
Bagram has been destroyed, hasn't it? Hasn't
Bagram, did you say?
Yes.
I was going to mention that, Linda. Bagram is a place that I spent many years studying, you know, at the end of the Bush administration, at the start of Obama. And they knocked down the old buildings completely and built a brand new place, thereby destroying the whole of that evidence.
And anybody's ability to go back in and recall it and restate what happened in this room or that room and what took
and
place
was,
in
you know, and it was a horrendously brutal place. Prisoners died in Bagram.
Bagram's Afghanistan, right?
Yeah.
So it was originally an Afghanistan prison, I believe, and there were people who suffered under that, but then the U.S. took control of it, and there were many more people who suffered under it.
Well, absolutely, you know, and we know that a number of individuals died there, as I said, and that, you know, the treatment of people in that place was really brutal. By the time people were then transferred into Guantanamo was a place of generally more clinical abuse than the blatant physical abuse that took place in Bagram. But, you know, it is clearly a site that should be maintained, should have been maintained and memorialized, because there is a very strong suggestion that these kind of contentious places need to be kept so that people can decide down the decades.
Yeah, they need the protection of history to be, come to light. They need that protection. Well, I want to go ahead and open the phones to people in our audience. Our phone number here is 503-231-8187. We're welcoming you to the conversation with comments or questions that you'd like to have of Andy, and any discussion you'd like to have with him about Guantanamo or any... I know there were people who were hunger striking with Guantanamo hunger strikers that are out there in the audience, and you're welcome to call and say what you'd like to say too. So once again, that phone number is 503-231-8187. Let's go ahead and talk a little bit more about this building boom on Guantanamo Bay. One of the things that I did want to bring out is it turns out we spend $441 million a year That can't be right. Maybe it's just $41 million a year to keep the people in Guantanamo. No, it's the $441 million. It's a huge amount of money we have justified strictly on the basis of maintaining the prisoners who are there, 41 of them. I looked at that and I thought, oh, my goodness.
It's around $10 million per prisoner compared to, I think, something like $35,000 a year to keep a prisoner in a maximum security prison on the U.S. mainland. So it's an insane amount of money that could only really be justified if you were to believe the hype about the people who are held there. And, you know...
So if you're a listener out there and you're kind of on the, you know, waffling about whether you really believe us that, you know, maybe these prisoners weren't so bad, but you do hear that amount of money and you think, hey, wait, you know, we have schools, we have healthcare, we have so many needs here in the United States with a budget that's been stripped of all the care of people in this country, as much of it has been cut back as possible, that we're spending that kind of money to imprison 41 people is astounding.
I think, to be honest, one of the things that always strikes me when I think about this, Linda, is that every year the time comes round when the Congress approves the bill for the military spending of the United States, and the amounts are so eye-wateringly huge that you would think that across the United States everybody is living the most wonderful lives of contentment and being looked after, when that's clearly not the case. So on military issues, Guantanamo is just part of a story where money that really should be spent in the United States on improving the lives of Americans is, you know, every year actually invested into the war machine. And, you know, I don't come from a country with a proud pacifist tendency. You know, Britain is a huge warmonger, which, in fact, I think basically handed on the baton of warmongering from our empire to the United States. And we spend quite a lot of our GDP on war, which is a ridiculous amount considering how small our significance is these days. But you know, we don't have the notion that we could be spending that money on something else, even in the UK. We got a leader of the opposition party who's well known for opposing the use of nuclear weapons, for example, and who is pretty much of a pacifist on quite a lot of issues. Not, you know, he would wage war if we were threatened, but that's got the establishment really rattled. In the United States, it's almost impossible to imagine that someone could rise to the position of President of the United States by, first of all, saying the amount of money that we spend on so-called defense, which is actually on our warmongering, is insane, and we need to bring that down to a realistic amount and spend that money on the people of America, on the infrastructure of America, on things that we need in this country. You know what I mean? It's impossible to imagine that could happen. How is that possible?
Well, you know, it's interesting to see how rapidly things have changed in society, but I'm sure you noticed this past weekend the young people out in the streets who have, you know, come fully into their own and said, we're tired of living in a country where you allow your children to be slaughtered in their schools. And many of them spoke quite eloquently, and I felt that I saw that there were some basic understandings that are really fundamental to wanting to resist this government, and that they have them there. They were very clear that, one, justice is not applied unevenly. It's not applied equally. That people are dying of gun violence in cities that are people of color, and they're not getting any attention. And so you saw lots of young women standing up to give the names of other young women killed in cities.
I saw that amazing. I was on your page when I was trying to get this conversation started, when you couldn't get through to me. I looked at that footage of that 11-year-old girl who spoke.
Yes, so eloquent.
Absolutely extraordinary.
And the kids that came out of Parkland, they right away said, we know why you're doing this, all of you in Congress. We're coming after you because you're taking money and you're saying our lives are not worth the amount of money that you are taking from the NRA. So they're very clear about two things. One, the government is bought and paid for, at least around this issue. Two, that justice isn't delivered equally. And that three, they had to get out there and do something about it. Now, they're very strongly wedded to the electoral system. But, you know, who knows how much they can make of that if they really get going on it. We had that fantastic election, I believe it was in North Carolina, where 97% of the African-American women came out in mass to vote down a man who acted like a pedophile and also was extremely racist. And so,
sure.
Those things give me hope. We never know what in society is going to be, when it's going to be enough is really enough, and people in their millions, you know, surge into the street, because it's going to take something like that when the Congress is owned by the interests of oil and military and, prisons. I mean, massive amounts.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, Linda. I mean, I think this is an issue that, you know, that the Western countries are looking at in general, but I mean, it's a much more acute situation in the United States for exactly those reasons that you mentioned, that, you know, that the death rate within the United States is so out of proportion to anything that's happening anywhere else in the supposedly civilized countries of the West, that something absolutely has to be done about it. And if people refuse to be quiet about it, and if people get out there in significant numbers, who's to say what could happen? You know, change can happen without people seeing it coming. And I really, really hope that people keep on going.
Yes, and I was so impressed with the basic understandings that these young people had, because without those, you can be led astray. You know, you can be fooled. And they're saying, no, we're not fools. We call BS on you. And
yeah,
we got some pretty good speech makers coming up from our ranks of the youth. And it was, a proud day, though. I particularly get to claim any of that pride for us, but it's a proud day just to see young people standing up and speaking their minds that way.
Yeah,
I wanted
absolutely.
To throw out the phone number in case there's anybody out there who would like to have a part of this conversation and say something. It's 503-231-8187. I did want to go back to the construction boom, because I think it's important what they're planning on Guantanamo and how much they're planning on spending. They're spending around $500 million on Guantanamo construction. By the way, I'm getting this news from Carol Rosenberg, who's with the Miami Herald, and I was so happy to see this woman has been writing about Guantanamo extensively, and, you know, just small articles about every change, even for over 10 years, probably the whole 16 years it's been going.
And it is, yeah.
And I so appreciate having that kind of real reporter looking at this here in the United States. I also want to tell people, if you want to find out about any of the individuals who've been held in Guantanamo, including those being held right now, you can go to Andy Worthington's website. It's andyworthington.co.uk. It's that easy. And you will find archives of every prisoner who was there. He's the only one who's really produce this kind of thing, and it's taken a lot of research, and it will tell you true stories about who these men really are. And I think if you have any doubts, that's really where to go to that archive, read about it. You also will have, you know, sign up for there and support Andy's website, because it's you're continually producing important news, I think, Andy, and important commentary on what's happening in our nation. So those are two ways you can get. I wanted to mention the Carol Rosenberg, because she stands out among other reporters in the nation. Now, being in Miami, they're closer to the scene, but still, that's important. But they're building all sorts of things, including they want to build a 250 million five-bed hospital for the people, the soldiers that work there. They want to.
Right.
Yeah, they want to build.
Well, you can see how much this is a gravy train for the construction contractors, can't you? When those kind of amounts of money are discussed.
Well, and it's a Cuban exile firm that was given a $66 million contract to build a Guantanamo-based school. And, you know, you hear some of the deals that the Trump administration has been handing out towards Puerto Rico, these like phony companies, basically, two people who've never done anything and they're getting millions of dollars. So I'm suspicious about these companies that are getting it in Guantanamo, but I don't know. It also turns out that Guantanamo right now has guest workers. Let me restate that, guest workers. When we say guest workers, that's when they invite immigrants to come in and do the hard labor.
Yeah.
We have guest workers all the time in Oregon coming, but they're not officially guests of anything. They just come to work in our fields. Some of them are residents year-round, but many of them come across the border in spring, and I haven't had a chance to check how that's been going here in Oregon as we're getting ready for our, you know, agricultural season to come into fruition. But California has said that they've been losing, I think, $15 million in agricultural products that couldn't be picked because there are not enough workers coming over. And no surprise.
Right, and the same thing is happening in the UK, Linda, where it's, you know, it's Brexit.
Oh, really?
The UK that's doing it. Yeah, so our decision to, you know, leave the EU and to say to people from the EU that they're not welcome in our country has meant that, you know, we've lost the basis of agricultural work, and, you know, food is rotting in the field.
Yes, and, you know, I know a man who has two sons who are doctors who were trained on cross-border with Mexico, and they're Mexican citizens, but they're, you know, highly sought-after doctors, and they've been practicing in the United States and in Mexico, but it turns out that they've gotten a little fed up with the United States attitude, and they're saying we're cutting back. We're not going to be working in the United States because we believe in serving everyone. We believe in taking every patient, and that is not the attitude of the United States any longer. So I found that very interesting as well, and we don't know how many people are choosing not to come to this country because they fear the response of our immigration program and being picked up illegally. So I think, you know, I think that it's pretty interesting that while that's going on, they're still bringing in, quote, guest workers to Guantanamo to do
a lot of the construction work. No, the hypocrisy is you know, astonishing. And I think you also made a very good point about the, you know, the facilities for refugees, and to remind people that that's what happened at Guantanamo before it became the War on Terror prison. And I think that that does absolutely indicate that the U.S. is preparing for some situation whereby they, you know, will be able to imprison lots of non-Americans to stop them from ending up in the United States. And I think it wouldn't be wrong to juxtapose that position taken by the Trump administration with the position the Trump administration has taken in response to dealing adequately with the welfare of the people of Puerto Rico after the devastation that hit that island.
That's right.
And the absolutely disgraceful treatment of those people by their government, by the United States. Absolutely extraordinary.
Turned our backs on our own people.
Totally.
And many of us don't recognize that they are our own people. But here is another interesting thing that's going on in Guantanamo with relation to migrants. They're having the Navy, Southcom, actually the Navy and a spokesman for the Navy from Southcom, the Department of Homeland Security, says that they will be conducting trainings to train people on how to deal with migration crisis.
Right.
Now, that is pretty darn ominous also, because that means they want to have the military respond to migration crisis in the United States. And, you know, our military, we have some rules that our military is not allowed to act in that manner. They're not allowed to substitute themselves for a police force, say.
Unless you have an officially racist government, Linda.
Well, yeah, and once you have that, they can do pretty much anything, can't they?
Yeah. Well, you know.
Except for the good people that stand up to them.
Yeah, well, absolutely. It does take people to stand up to them, and the thing that people, you know, need to be aware of, and I'm sure that this must have been stated by some of the speakers recently, these amazing young women, is that, you know, we are many and they are few. Because in the end, you know, we do outnumber them.
Yes. And, you know, so we see that they're preparing to deal with migration crisis, and they have camps of 13, you know, that are intended to hold up to 13,000. We know in general they don't mind overflowing our prisons that hold migrants as well. So it's pretty ominous. I think it speaks for all of us in terms of human rights. It really is that slippery slope, that famous statement of first they came for the, I don't remember which one it was, first they came for the communists. But, you know, it really is that
Absolutely.
Slippery slope where they change the laws one by one until what should be legal is not and what is.
Well, that's why, to get back to Guantanamo, Linda, the issue with Guantanamo has been two things. One is that, you know, that it's interesting that these are people who are individuals who all had their own stories, because, you know, the point of the Bush administration was to dehumanize them. But in a more abstract sense of what's keeping those people there, what's the situation, these are purely foreigners. This is not American citizens that this is happening to. But these are foreign citizens, and the United States has said to the world, we are not holding ourselves to the same rules when it comes to the way that we treat these Muslim prisoners that we have at Guantanamo. They don't get trials. They don't get held until the end of hostilities under the Geneva Conventions. They're nobodies. They have no rights as human beings. That's fundamentally what George W. Bush said 16 years about them. And it's still fundamentally true. You can't get out of Guantanamo at all under any circumstances unless the President of the United States, sometimes with Congress, sometimes without, wants you to leave. You are stuck there forever, except through the benevolence of the President of the United States. How is that a legal system? How is that fair? If that was happening to U.S. citizens, can you imagine the uproar?
So there has, I would hope for the uproar.
There has for 16 years been this situation at Guantanamo where foreigners are treated abominably by the United States government in ways that would not be acceptable if that was applied to Americans. And that's why it's so important that it stops, because as we remember from Pastor Niemöller at the time of the Nazis, first they came for, and in his saying it was the trade unionists or the communists or the homosexuals or the Jews. In this case, first they came for the Muslims, and that is absolutely true what happened in 2002 when Guantanamo was set up.
Yes.
And, you know, the Muslims today, who could it be tomorrow?
Well, and I think we know who it could be. I mean, it's other immigrants, and then we'll see. You know, they are right now going after, they're particularly targeting immigrants activists who have been activists on behalf of themselves and other immigrants, and they are starting proceedings on several immigrant activists around the nation. So I think we can see the direction they want it to go. What's going to be important
is... Yeah, totally, Linda. You know, one of the most shocking things in the last few years in this country, in the UK, was how we heard that Theresa May, when she was the Home Secretary, before she became our Prime Minister, stripped the British nationality off two dual national citizens who were in Syria, who were allegedly with ISIS, but, you know, they never went through any judicial process.
And they did, and could be stripped,
She stripped them of the British part, so they had dual nationality. She stripped them of their British nationality, then she told the U.S. where they were, and then the U.S. killed them in drone strikes.
Wow.
That's just extrajudicial assassination with the extra element of stripping citizenship. So when they can get away with stripping the citizenship of dual nationals, they're only one step away from stripping the citizenship off us, making us stateless.
Well, and when people you look at... Yes, I agree.
In the United States... who have citizenship by birth, by right, the same in the UK. What they want is, when they don't like you, they want to remove your existence. And they're getting one step closer to it by getting away with what they're doing to dual nationals. And, you know, this isn't a fanciful notion. You know that right-wingers, when they sit around together and go on about the people that they don't like, they end up having these conversations when they think no one's listening, about what to do about people that they don't like, who are protected by the, you know, the magic of citizenship. How they can get rid of that is what they want.
I think that you're probably right about that. I know that they are also going after activists. There was a man who filmed, I believe, the murder of Eric Gardner, a man in New York who was became famous for saying 11 times, "I can't breathe."
Absolutely.
While he was being choked. And the man who was filming all of that has ended up in prison. He was charged with domestic violence and something else, but they were mostly minor things. And I think that there's no question that they went after him directly to try to get him away so that, you know, they make everyone be afraid to have any kind of legal charge against them, even if it's in the furtherance of their, you know, their right to resist in this country or to go to a protest or to organize for that. One of the other things, I wanted to bring this one up about Guantanamo. It doesn't look like we're going to have any callers, and I thank you for being listeners out there, even though you haven't called in. We're running out of time, but I wanted to mention the art exhibit that came from Guantanamo Bay. When we think about these 41 men, I don't know how most of us think of them, but I don't think we think of them as artists. Do you know much about that and want to talk about that at all?
I mean, when I was over in January, because I come to the States every January to protest about the existence of Guantanamo on the anniversary of its opening, which was on January the 11th. And the exhibition that was at the John Jay College in New York, which started in the fall, was still on. So I got to go and see it. I got to meet the curator. And, you know, these were people who had been allowed to express their humanity through art classes at a time in Guantanamo when I think essentially this was under Obama, when they realized that they were holding people for a very long time. I think there was a recognition within the administration that the mess that had been created by Bush was a difficult one to solve, and so one way of dealing with the long, long time that these people were there was that if they were well behaved, to give them some kind of perks to acknowledge that they were human beings. And so one of the things that they did, and they actually, you know, started promoting it to the media as a good thing, to show that they were, you know, that they were human beings, that the captors, I'm not talking about the prisoners, that the U.S. military were human, was to allow them to express themselves in these art classes. Nothing vaguely contentious has been allowed.
Well, and I just want to say that making art is so good for the soul.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm an artist, and I know many other artists, and I know many people who do artwork just because of that experience of ease, and, you know, it's a way of being alive, expressing ourselves through art.
Well, sure, you know.
You know, we only have a minute. I believe, though, that I'm so excited that you saw that exhibit, but I believe, though, that now they've stopped allowing them to send out. These were drawings that had been sent out by prisoners, not to be in an art show, but sent out to family and others. And I believe they've now been stopped from being able to do that.
They're not allowed to give them to people, and the military is talking about destroying them. But what it revealed really was how when there was publicity which portrayed the prisoners as human beings, the U.S. military went back to its default position of trying to dehumanize them.
Yes.
And has come up with a very cruel and unnecessary response to what these people in Guantanamo are doing. And there's one guy in Guantanamo, using recycled materials, making these amazing ships. That's what he did every day, just to preserve his sanity. Why not? You know, they've completely stopped allowing him to do that. So, you know, his lifeline has been destroyed. I dread to think what's happening to the poor
man. You know, and those kinds of things are so cruel. That's cruel and unusual punishment. It's not unusual, but it's cruel punishment. There's no need for that, you know.
This guy isn't a proven mass murderer. This guy is not a significant prisoner. You know, he's done nothing whereby people could say, oh, but he's such a bad guy, you know. And actually, even if he were such a bad guy, you're still supposed to allow human beings to express themselves.
Yes, well, we're going to have to end.
Of their liberty is the big punishment.
Yes. We're going to have to end right there. Andy Worthington of the Guantanamo Files. You can find him at andyworthington.co.uk. Please do look that up. I want to thank you so much, Andy. You bring so much to the conversation, so much knowledge, but also so much strong feeling. I really appreciate getting to speak with you.
Yeah, I always love talking to you as well, Linda. So until the next time, thank you very much.
Yes, and I will see you on Facebook.
Yeah.
All right. That's ironic for many reasons, but we'll leave it there. Thank you. And I want to thank our engineer, Tammy Dean. Not that I haven't known her for 10 years. Sorry, her name just flew out. And Derek Crooks, our wonderful AM and news director. And I want to thank you, the audience, for being an audience at KBOO, for listening to these shows that we so much want to bring you. Once again, thank you from myself, Linda Olsen-Osterlin, and thank you from our whole station.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor One Word's Alive Tour on Thursday, April 5th, 7 p.m. at Specs Records and Tapes, 8216 North Denver Avenue in Portland. This in-store performance by One Word for his Alive Spring Tour will be followed by several sets from local hip-hop support, Lisa Vasquez, Burt Sienna, Valvoline, and Northern Draw. This is an all-ages show, again, all ages. That's One Word's Alive Tour at Specs Records, 8216 North Denver Avenue in Portland, on Thursday, April 5th, from 7 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.